Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 28th, 2023. City of Pecos files lawsuit over property tied to Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Pecos. On August 25th, the City of Pecos filed a lawsuit against Wilmar Land, LLC, and 124 South Oak Street, LLC, the latter of which is filed under Big Bend Law, the private practice of Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton. The suit claims that a property in downtown Pecos was unlawfully sold by the city in 2021 to Joe McFadden of Wilmar Land, during which time Ponton was Pecos city attorney, who in turn sold the property to an LLC belonging to Ponton in 2022. Because the sale violated statutory requirements governing the sale of city land, the suit argues, the sale should be rendered void. At a meeting on January 28, 2021, Pecos Council members approved a resolution that would sell the property to Wilmar Land, LLC, for $35,000. Ponton was the City of Pecos attorney at the time of the sale to Wilmar, and had also been city attorney when the property was originally purchased from the West of the Pecos Museum. Ponton told the Big Bend Sentinel that he had nothing to do with the sale, which he claims was negotiated between McFadden and the then city manager. In the petition filed with the 143rd District Court, current City of Pecos attorney Parker Johnson argues that that sale never should have happened. By ordinance, city-owned property must be bought and sold by a set process. The property must be posted in the newspaper and open for public bid. McFadden, whose Wilmar Land LLC also owns property in Brewster County, said that then-city manager Seth Sorensen approached him about buying the property in Pecos. The building on the property was in a dilapidated state and in danger of being torn down. The city wanted to fix it up, but dragged their feet for a few years, he said, and Sorensen knew that I was looking at properties over there. Sorensen submitted the resolution to City Council authorizing the sale, which was then approved by a vote before the property could be publicly posted for bid. He could not be reached for comment. A little over a year later, McFadden suffered a stroke and had to return home to recuperate. To lighten his load, he sold the property to Ponton. I love Pecos and I wanted to stay, but the stroke changed everything in my life, McFadden said. Both McFadden and Ponton said that properties had been sold in Pecos through the city council without going out for public bid many times before and didn't understand why they should be treated any differently. There are properties on the same street that have been sold the same way, Ponton said. The suit argues that because the city did not follow its own ordinance, the sale of the land to McFadden, and thus the transfer of the land to Ponton, was unlawful and that the resulting deeds were void. The sale of the property from the City of Pecos was done in violation of the statutory requirements for sale of property by municipalities, the petition reads. If the suit is successful, ownership of the 118 South Oak Street property will be returned to the City of Pecos, and the city will also be reimbursed for attorney fees. Ponton claimed that the suit was just dirty politics and that transferring the deed back to the city would violate Texas property law. You shouldn't involve a city in the legal system on the basis of a bogus claim, he said. Photo by Chad Wadsworth. This year's Trans-Pecos Festival of Music Plus Love will be the last at El Cosmico's current location, as preparations for a move and expansion are underway. Trans-Pecos Festival begins final run at current location as El Cosmico looks to the future. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, this week, beginning on Thursday, the 17th Annual Trans-Pecos Festival of Music Plus Love will kick off at the El Cosmico Campground along U.S. 67, just south of city limits, as it has every year prior. Next year, as every Marfa local knows, is a different story. The nomadic hotel that has become a hub of picturesque tourist visits, with its Instagrammable tents and yurts, will have relocated across town, with considerably expanded offerings and accommodations. Trans-Pecos, of course, will go with it, making this year a send-off of sorts from its birthplace. But El Cosmico founder Liz Lambert stresses that the festival will stay true to its roots. She has no intention of dramatically increasing ticket sales, she says, if at all. We don't want to be Lollapalooza, said Lambert in an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, referencing the famed Chicago Music Festival that draws around 400,000 annual attendees. We understand where we are. Trans-Pecos caps its ticket sales at 1,500. That includes ticket sales to locals, in large part because Marfa's infrastructure can only support so many visitors at a time. But it's also the case that what is born out of necessity has become the festival's trademark charm. Visiting musicians have been drawn to the relative intimacy of the event compared to larger venues. Part of what's beautiful about it is how small it is, said Lambert. So she plans to keep it small, even as the venue itself gets larger. In March of this year, Lambert announced her ambitious plan to relocate the outdoor resort to a swath of land triple its current size off Antelope Hills Road. The plan includes the construction of 3D-printed hotel units, a restaurant, a swimming pool, and a bathhouse, plus 30 to 40 3D-printed homes along the outskirts of the property. Between the 3D-printed accommodations and the relocated tents and yurts from the old site, the new El Cosmico will include around 120 hotel units, roughly doubling its current number of units. The announcement has elicited some concerns from locals, particularly those who live in or near the Antelope Hills subdivision, about the impacts the development and accompanying traffic may have on the area's water infrastructure, roads, noise pollution, and more. Most recently, the question of how best to divert hotel traffic from the poorly maintained Antelope Hills Road has been a topic of discussion at Presidio County Commissioners' Court meetings. A proposal to put a road through Vizcaino Park as an alternative, recently presented at court, has been met with resistance by some. Liz Lambert herself was present at Wednesday's Commissioners' Court meeting to advocate for the plan, which would pull traffic away from Antelope Hills Road and onto the state-maintained FM 1112 and provide an easement through the park. In response to fears the road would interfere with the park, she said she hopes the plan leads to its revitalization. County Commissioner David Beebe, who first placed the proposal on the agenda, said his concern was monetary. Antelope Hills Road is a county-run Antelope Hills Road is county run and difficult to maintain. Diverting traffic to the state-maintained highway would keep heavy traffic off of Antelope Hills and would be in the county's best interest. We have a budget crisis, and the reason I'm concerned about this project at all is we have a budget crisis that's going to get worse every year, said Beebe on Wednesday. Though the plan to relocate El Cosmico is steadily moving forward, the sale of the land has closed, and the team still anticipates breaking ground in early 2024. These questions around infrastructure are still being explored, said Lambert. Road access aside, her team is still in talks with the city of Marfa about potentially extending water supply to the site. Residents had been concerned about impacts to their wells, but with no resolution. The Trans-Pecos Festival is inherently a part of these discussions. Though not El Cosmico's primary reason for being, it is the event that draws the most visitors to the grounds annually. By extension, it brings in some of the largest crowds that Marfa sees all year. The festival has grown considerably since its early days. In fact, said Lambert, the inaugural Trans-Pecos was really more of a party, with just around 200 guests. They had passed out flyers to neighbors to rally attendees. It was in the early days of El Cosmico when she was toying around with different ideas for hotel units. She had concocted a plan to help fund the project by drawing folks to an event where they could opt to buy renovated trailers as condos. That plan quickly got thrown to the wayside, she said, but the party remained. El Cosmico has grown organically since those early days, she said, distinct from her other hotel projects. In this case, because we've been able to add teepees or yurts or different sorts of dwelling structures over the years, we've just been able to grow the footprint over the years, she said. I mean, we really did begin with two trailers. As the resort and the annual festival has grown in size, it has in some ways remained the same. The relative smallness of the festival not only has a regular cast of local musicians who turn up to play, but keeps bringing out regular visitors to its stages. We have many musicians who come play the festival every year, which is unusual, and stay for several days. Most music festivals, most of the time people are in and out really quickly, said Lambert. We're not trying to recreate Trans-Pecos, she added. It serves us well for what it is. If it's not broke, I don't think we should try to fix it. Ben Queller performs at last year's Trans-Pecos Festival. The musician will perform again at this year's festival on Thursday. Photo by Chad Wadsworth. Fort Davis ISD partners with private early childhood schools for funding boost. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Fort Davis. With public school funding in a state of turmoil across Texas, Fort Davis ISD is turning to an unorthodox solution to increase state aid. Partnerships with early childhood programs, wherein dual enrollment is meant to financially benefit both entities. Superintendent Graydon Hicks, who has long told of his district's financial ruin at the hand of a flawed state funding formula, said he first became aware of the private school partnerships, a Texas Education Agency program, this summer, and immediately jumped on it and started working on proposals for these organizations. For Fort Davis, it is the only option left. The school board understands how much this means to Fort Davis and keeping our doors open and our kids serviced, said Hicks. We get the satisfaction on the other side of knowing that some other children are reaping benefits from this as well. This school year, FDISD entered into one-year renewable legal agreements with both Alpine Christian School and Alpine Montessori, as well as schools in Monahans and El Paso. These schools enroll pre-kindergarten through second-grade students who aren't subject to state testing, simplifying the deal with FDISD, and in turn get 50% of the additional state aid the district receives for those students. They don't have to start wearing green and gold. They don't have to have the Indian mascot, said Hicks. Nothing changes. Literally, nothing changes except for paperwork. At the start of the school year, FDISD had around 167 students enrolled, but Hicks anticipates that number will nearly double to around 300 students by the end of October, once new partnerships are finalized. That influx in enrollment will not result in more children physically entering Fort Davis classrooms, but will allow the district to receive the state minimum allotment per pupil of $6,160, or in some cases for 3- and 4-year-olds, just over $3,000. Attendance is another state funding factor, and private schools who partner with FDISD will have to provide daily attendance reports, said Hicks. Alpine Montessori plans to enroll 28 students with FDISD, which could result in roughly $172,000 total, or a $86,000 split for each entity. Katie Nixon, an Alpine Montessori board member, said in addition to the funds, the entity was looking forward to having access to more teacher training and resources for students. The district may also help purchase technology or supplies for the private schools. Alpine Christian School declined to be interviewed for this story, citing the newness of the partnership. For Fort Davis, the current addition of 133 students could result in $400,000. But it will be a year before any money is realized due to TEA's funding cycles, said Hicks. Any surplus received will initially go towards building the district's fund balance or savings account back up, as well as teacher salary increases, said Hicks. In FDISD's case, the increase in enrollment may result in the district no longer being subject to recapture payments the district makes to the state because it is considered to have, quote, excess wealth, end quote, per student, a result of low enrollment coinciding with high property values. Last school year, the district paid around $30,000 in recapture. As far as Hicks is concerned, the private school partnership solution is a win-win. We get a little money, they get a little money. We get out of recapture, and the state pays their fair share, said Hicks. He said at first the partnership organizations he approached questioned the initiative's legality, but he assured them it was a state-supported program. According to the TEA, 174 districts across the state utilized the Early Learning Public-Private Partnerships program, which began in 2003. All of the organizations on the initial call were skeptical that this was a legitimate program, said Hicks. They couldn't believe that there was actually a way to secure money without all of the bureaucratic red tape and requirements. But the partnerships aren't without their complications. Despite the fact that these transactions are not affecting classroom operations, in order to meet required student-to-teacher ratios, FDISD will have to hire staff from partner organizations, effectively adding them to their payroll, even though they are not physically working within the district and will remain with private schools. They will also have to do evaluations on staff they hire in collaboration with the private schools where they actually work. The money for their salaries and benefits will come out of the private school's 50% split, as would any supply purchases, said Hicks. But while FDISD absorbing a staff member will result in cost savings immediately for the private school, the district has to pick up that expense before increased enrollment funds are realized next fall. Hicks said he recently submitted documentation to TEA requesting additional cash flow to remedy the issue. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a real challenge, said Hicks. I'm saying I need TEA to adjust my numbers up because I'm really going to be closer to 300 on my attendance projection, and I need the additional funding now so that I can keep my cash flow solvent until we get to the settlement period next September. If they say no, then I'm going to have a problem, Hicks added, but I promise you I'll figure it out. There is also the matter of special education and English as a second language, ESL, students, who require more resources, therefore receive more funding from the state. Hicks said the early childhood private school partnerships they are entering into will include a couple of students in those populations. FDISD will be legally obligated to provide certain services to those students, which would involve going to the private schools where the kids are located, said Hicks. When asked whether that would put a strain on FDISD resources and staffing, Hicks said details are still being worked out, and while meeting those requirements for students in Alpine may be feasible, it would not be for students involved in El Paso school partnerships. I'm not going to mess around with failing to provide services that these kids require, said Hicks. On the flip side, since these are private schools, they can choose who they want to enroll as well. Let's say we have a special ed child in El Paso that's going to require a great deal of resources. My recommendation to those parents and to that private school would be, don't enroll that child in Fort Davis. Enroll that child in the school district in which they reside, he added. Whether FDISD will be able to sustain these partnerships remains to be seen. Hicks said all the responsibility to keep up with state requirements falls on him, and he intends to make the agreements as easy as possible on the collaborating schools. Alpine ISD Superintendent Michelle Reinhardt recently told the Alpine Avalanche that AISD was open to partnering with local early childhood programs as well. Alpine Montessori told the Big Bend Sentinel it plans to partner with AISD for the 2024 school year. While the partnerships differ from the school choice program, the controversial, hotly debated subject of a forthcoming special legislative session, in structure, at the core, they both involve valuable public education dollars funneling into private school coffers. A similarity, Hicks believes, gives the private school partnerships political staying power. That's why I don't think anybody can say anything about it, said Hicks, because the leadership in Austin right now are so bent on school vouchers. If there's public money going to private school, they're not going to say anything about that. They're going to cheer that. They're going to support that.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, October 5th, 2023. City amends personnel policy manual. The Fort Stockton City Council on September 25th approved Ordinance Number 23-129. An ordinance amending the Personnel Policies and Procedures Manual by incorporating revised job descriptions for part-time and seasonal or temporary pay grade 13, records manager pay grade 15, communications supervisor pay grade 20, senior administrative assistant pay grade 20, information technology technician pay grade 22, assistant to the finance director, pay grade 22, director of finance, pay grade 32, Chief of Police, pay grade 32, EDC Executive Director, pay grade 32, Assistant City Manager, pay grade 32, to the job classification table and compensation plan salary scale, repealing job descriptions for City Attorney, pay grade 15, to the job classification table and compensation plan salary scale. We're going to make changes to the classification table. We're going to remove certain positions and we're reclassifying others, said Human Resource Director Sarah Matta. City Manager Frank Rodriguez said the item had been discussed at the city's budget workshops. The council renewed its contract with City Attorney Puha Boinpale for 12 months ending September 25, 2024, for a retainer of $60,000. The retainer includes attendance at all regularly and specially called meetings, advising City Council of municipal and legal developments, consultation with city staff and council members regarding city matters and issues, and reviewing and drafting agreements regarding the general business of the city. The drafting of special agreements will not be assessed separately if it is determined by the attorney and city manager that such work is within the parameters of the retained dollar figure. All litigation matters will be billed on a case-to-case basis. You've done a great job keeping us out of trouble, said Mayor Paul Casillas. The council approved Ordinance 23-130, a budget amendment for the 22-23 budget. The Economic Development 4B Corporation requested $166,000 for community development at Gene Cummings Park. Venue Tax requested total of $40,015 for the audio system at the Convention Center, and the Rec Department requested $24,000 for purchase of a John Deere Gator mower. The Council approved Ordinance Number 23-131, which amends Chapter 12, Garbage and Trash, Article 3. The city increased its garbage collection fee by $1 per month for residential customers and $2 per month for commercial customers. The council approved Ordinance 23-132, amending Chapter 24 of the Court of Ordinances of the City of Fort Stockton, titled Utilities, Article 2, Service Rates and Charges, Division 2, Service Rates, Section 2451. Rates for water, wastewater, gas services, and tap charges within the corporate city limits. The new ordinance reflects a $1 per month increase for residential water customers and $2 for commercial customers, 10 cents on the tiers of the residential and 50 cents for commercial, $1 increase for residential gas customers and $2 for commercial, 10 cents on the tiers for the residential and 50 cents for commercial. The city approved Resolution Number 23-120R, authorizing the City of Fort Stockton to file a grant application with Apache Corporation for the 23-24 Apache Corporation Tree Grant Program. Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful applied for a grant, and this would allow our city manager to accept it, said Nina Cantu. They've already approved 150 trees. They're just waiting for us to accept it, and this resolution gives them the authority to do so. 50 trees will go to the cemetery. Approved payment in the amount of $70,659 to West Texas Refrigeration as per the agreement previously approved by the City Council on September 12th meeting for the purchase of a Kohler 50 kilowatt diesel generator model 50 REOZX OZK and a 208 three-phase service entry automatic transfer switch. Since the purchase was over $50,000, it required City Council approval. The city approved leasing 7 new Chevy Tahoe SUVs for the police department through Enterprise Leasing, and it approved software as a service renewal agreement between the City of Fort Stockton and Cologic in the amount of $58,458.37 for the Collegic SaaS solution for the police department. The city will celebrate Halloween on Saturday, October 28th. FSCT announces November events. Fort Stockton Community Theater announces two performances for the whole family in November. On Saturday, November 4th, FSCT is partnering with Odessa Council for the Arts and Humanities to bring in an original bilingual play, Las Nuevas Tamaleras, written and directed and produced by Alicia Mina, who wrote the play to honor longstanding traditions and find some humor following the death of her mother. The play is about three women who attempt their first tamalada, underestimating the blood, sweat, and tears that go into making tamales. They ultimately succeed with the help of divine intervention from the spirits of experienced tamaleras. Mena said audience members resonate with the play's main theme of trying to preserve traditions and could easily fade from generation to generation. We're excited to be in a part of the West Texas tour for Las Tamaleras, especially after just coming off our second successful burial fest, which is all about preserving the traditions and culture of the Hispanic people. Younger generations have often experienced the challenges of preparing traditional foods of their culture and will be able to relate to Las Nuevas Tamaleras. Following the performance at 7 p.m., on Saturday, November 4th, there will be a reception for audience members and cast to enjoy getting to know one another. On Monday, November 13th, at 7 p.m., Chevron, the human energy company, is bringing back the Tenors Unlimited from Great Britain to perform in Fort Stockton for the first time since COVID. FSCT is very grateful to Chevron for sponsoring this return concert and is excited to welcome back Paul, Scott, and Jim, the Rat Pack of opera, who sing everything from Jersey Boys to Verdi. The Fort Stockton High School Choir, under the direction of Omar Guerrero, will also perform with the tenors. The concert will be held at Northside Church at 1600 North Gillis because of seating capacity and technical equipment. There will be a meet-and-greet reception, also hosted by Chevron, on Sunday evening, November 12th at 7 p.m. at FMH next to the Nelson Street Theater. Please check out firstcommunitytheater.org for ticket information and reservations. Tickets may be purchased online with credit card or at the door for cash or check only. Lions Club International are Knights of the Blind and provide eyeglasses to those in need. Fort Stockton Lions Club donated $1,000 to some very prestigious travelers on Saturday, September 30th. Fellow Lion Dr. Tom Prutt, Rotarian Walter Branson, and Lion Alma Sanchez lead the Guerrero Crystal Foundation. Dr. Prutt started the program in January 1981, providing eye exams to children in Chihuahua, Mexico. They now help people of all ages by providing eye exams, medical treatment, and food to Mexicans, Mennonites, and the Palomar Indians within the Chihuahua region. The foundation has a clinic which is open year-round. For 1 week out of the year, the clinic provides cataract surgeries. During this week, they will provide roughly 300 surgeries to people in need. The Guerrero Crystal Foundation Clinic provides 60% of the indigent care in Chihuahua, making them the sixth largest clinic in the world. Fort Stockton Lions Club would like to thank Dr. Tom Prutt for his service and dedication. At 92 years of age, his passion is the definition of a true lion. Where there is a need, there's a lion. In attendance were Lion Irene Fabella, Sam Calderon II, Jesusita Calderon, Veronica Carrasco, and Anita Gandhi. SRSU 10th in Texas in new U.S. News & World Report rankings. Sol Ross State University is 10th in Texas in the latest U.S. News & World Report rankings of best colleges announced in September. SRSU also ranked 47th in top public universities in the West, 95th in top regional universities in the West, and 52 for social mobility. According to the rankings report, which can be found at usnews.com/best colleges, regional universities offer a full range of undergraduate programs and some master's programs, but few doctoral programs. Public colleges and universities typically operate under the supervision of state governments and are funded in part by tax dollars and subsidies from the state. As a result, these universities often offer discounted tuition to residents of their states. Public schools run the gamut from small liberal arts colleges to large research institutions. Saul Ross has consistently received high rankings for social mobility, which measures how well schools graduate disadvantaged students. Economically disadvantaged students are less likely than others to finish college, even when controlling for their achievement in high school. But some colleges are more successful than others at advancing social mobility by enrolling and graduating large portions of disadvantaged students awarded with Pell Grants. The vast majority of these federal grants are awarded to students whose adjusted gross family incomes are under $50,000. SRSU also got high marks for class size, faculty-to-student ratio, and student indebtedness. Subway at the Flying J begins remodeling inside the building at Front Street, temporarily closed for a complete remodel. Work began last week and is expected to be a 3-week project if no unforeseen delays occur. The new and improved subway will reopen after construction, and more work will trickle into the Flying J side of the building. The construction slated for the Flying J travel stop will include new shower paneling and other cosmetic upgrades. The management and staff of Flying J and Subway thanks the community for their patience during the ongoing construction of their facilities. Rotary foreign exchange students meet for retreat. 6 participants in the Rotary International Foreign Exchange Program traveled to Fort Stockton September 7th for a 3-day orientation and retreat. The students were accompanied by 4 sponsors from Rotary District 5520 and were greeted by members of the Fort Stockton Rotary Club, which played host to the meeting. The students represented Chile, Brazil, Germany, and Spain and range in age from 15 to 17. Fort Stockton student is Javier Ramwell, who came to us from Brazil. Activities included a tour of the historical sites of the city, led by Ross Harper, a tailgate party at Williams Regional Technical Training Center, Midland College campus, and attendance at the Friday night Panther football game. On Saturday, the students visited the McKenzie Cattle Ranch and Alfalfa Farm, located east of the city. The McKenzie family, which also hosted 2 of the students, gave an informative tour of the Black Angus cattle operation, which grows its own cattle feed at the adjacent farm. After lunch at a local restaurant, students shopped in local shops and played a game of disc golf at Rooney Park. That evening, the students had a swim party at Rotarian Michelle Huckabee's home. A potluck dinner was provided by members of the club. A look at travelers passing through Fort Stockton by Jeremy Gonzalez. The local Flying J off Interstate 10 draws in various travelers around the clock. Among Friday's crowd was a couple from West Central Texas headed with their 2 dogs, Ruger and Lucille. "We're headed back to early Texas," began Buck. "Taking a break here in Fort Stockton, we stopped to give the dogs a drink of water and a break. Give ourselves a break, too." Buck shared that he and his wife Jenny have driven through town before, but only for an overnight stay and to fuel up. With a dog leash in hand, he went on to discuss his plans of possibly returning to West Texas with his horses. "I'm 80 years old and I'm still walking my dogs and riding horses. I'd like to come back this way in the fall and bring the horses to do some riding over in the Big Bend National Park. Fort Stockton seems like a nice little town. We've only stayed here once in an RV park, but never got to look around at what's really here." The couple was proud to share that their dogs Ruger and Lucille do wonderful on the road and even have an onboarding ramp to crawl into their backseat den of beds. "We went to Tucson, Arizona, and we're headed straight back to Early," added Jenny. "It was sort of a business trip. We didn't get to do much on this trip. I travel a lot for work. We're going to travel to California on Sunday." After kindly opening up about their business road trips, the couple and their dogs all hopped into their SUV and departed for their home in Brown County.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, October 5th. MEDC offers to buy back land from car wash for easement. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan's Economic Development Board members voted 4-1 on Monday in a special meeting to submit an offer in the amount of $6,371 to purchase a 0.159-acre tract of land back from Car Wash 828. MEDC has been at odds with Car Wash 828 over the easement sought across part of the property, which is owned by the car wash. The easement is necessary in order to connect new sewer lines for future commercial development into the established main sewer city line, which is located on the car wash property. Director Ashley Adalto said, quote, Car Wash 828 owners wanted to see a proposal they could submit to the Small Business Association, the SBA. The amount was calculated by the square footage originally sold to the company, end quote. MEDC sold the 2-acre lot to the car wash for $80,000, less than $1 a square foot. The group met in executive session to discuss the proposal, and after reconvening back into regular session, Board President Richard Irwin asked if anyone wanted to make a motion to accept the proposal. While no one offered a motion, City Manager Rex Thee told Irwin there was not anything against him offering the motion. Irwin then offered the motion, and member Leticia Rodriguez seconded. When it was called to a vote, members Irwin, Rodriguez, Kathy Anthony, and Mary Elena Sines all voted for buying the land back, while member Hal Upchurch voted against the purchase. Car wash owners Shelley Porras and Tracy Rodriguez had been steadfast they could not move forward without compensation according to stipulations stated in their SBA loan, saying, quote, their hands were tied since they are in the process of a refinance and they had several conflicting issues and want to make sure they are making the right decision for the company, end quote. Originally, Adalto and the board were against buying the land back, saying, quote, it wasn't ethical for MEDC to have to pay for it since the property was sold below market value and it would set a precedent, end quote. EDC's engineering firm, Maverick Engineering, told Adalto options going forward without the easement will be costly and take up valuable real estate because the capacity from the property west of the car wash will not support sewer to other commercial lots and a lift station would need to be added or have the sewer come from the access road, which would cost around $250,000. Board members voted to delay any scope of work agreement costs, assuming they did not get an easement, until they knew for sure to prevent Maverick Engineering from doing the work in vain. Quote, if the proposal isn't accepted, we will have to move forward with another option, Adalto added. As of press time, it wasn't known if the owners of Car Wash 828 accepted the proposal or not. Bustos to serve over 7 years for distributing cocaine. Meza to be sentenced late November. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man arrested last November during simultaneous drug raids conducted in Monahans and Thorntonville has now been ordered to serve 87 months, just over 7 years, in a federal prison. Anthony Bustos Sr. of 1511 South Allen Street appeared in front of Magistrate Judge David Counts on September 22nd to hear his fate after he pleaded guilty in February to conspire and possess with intent to distribute cocaine. Bustos was one of eight, six of which are not from Monahans, charged in a 9-count indictment. Daniel Ochoa Meza of 701 South Wilma Street was also named in the indictment. entered a guilty plea on June 14th without a written plea agreement to the same charge. According to court documents, from around April 2022 up until November 2022, Meza would receive cocaine from Gilberto Hernandez to distribute, and on April 8th, the defendant planned to meet Hernandez to retrieve the cocaine. However, Meza's co-defendant, Bustos, met with Hernandez at a rest area on Interstate 10 near the I-20-I-10 split to pick up both his and Meza's share of cocaine. Bustos received 21 ounces from Hernandez, 16 ounces for him to distribute, and 5 for Meza to distribute. Bustos then met with Meza to give him his portion. Later in April, Bustos met with Hernandez to pay both his and Meza's share from the sale of the cocaine. Both Bustos and Meza pleaded guilty to possessing 500 grams, 1.1 pounds or more of cocaine. The government also asked for the forfeiture of Bustos' home, located at 1511 South Bruce, because the defendants used the property to store drugs, money from sale of drugs, and money intended to purchase drugs. The items are subject to forfeiture. The forfeiture was granted on September 22nd. Several other individuals charged in the case have entered guilty pleas. Bustos and Meza have remained in federal custody since their arrest last November. Bustos was given a bond but remained in custody in lieu of posting the bond. Meza was originally given a bond, but in December, U.S. District Judge David Counts in Midland ruled on a motion to stay from Meza and denied his request for bond, meaning Meza had to remain in federal custody until his trial. Counts said, quote, "There is no condition or combination of conditions which would reasonably assure the appearance of Meza as required and the safety of the community, and there is clear and convincing evidence that Meza is a danger to the community, as well as the evidence indicates that he is a risk of flight," end quote. Both were facing a mandatory minimum of 5 years imprisonment. Judge Counts further ordered Bustos to serve 5 years supervised release and pay a $100 special assessment fee. Meza's sentencing has been reset for the third time and is scheduled for November 28th at 8 a.m. before Judge David Counts in Midland. MHS students have gone robotic. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Building robots may sound like science fiction, but robots are a very real part of today's world, and so is the Monahans High School robotics team. Teaching STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and robotics to high school students in the classroom has positive results, such as encouraging them to pursue STEM careers and help them develop the necessary 21st century skills that will enable them with the skills and knowledge for success in the future. By the time students graduate in the next few years, over half of the available jobs will be in the STEM field. The main goal of robotics is to create studies for those students who want to pursue STEM careers with an emphasis in engineering. In the high school level robotics classes, the students are responsible for designing and then building their robots. Once the robot is put together, the students then program the computerized brain to perform the right tasks using computer coding language. They are not allowed to receive any help from outside of their team. All aspects of the robotics design and build are done strictly by the students. This type of learning essentially teaches the students the engineering design process, building from the ground up. Quote, "One of my students, who who graduated last year, Aiden Salcido, has gone on to pursue an education in mechanical engineering at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, Hogan said. The MHS robotics class students are in the process of designing, building, and teaching their robots to perform delicate surgeries, such as performing heart surgery, removing plaque from arteries and tumors from the brain. When competing against other high school robotics teams, the teams accrue points on the difficulty level and the precision in completing the task in the 3-minute allotted time frame. A facsimile representing the human body is laid out on the floor, such as one section is built to represent the human heart, another the arteries, and so on. The students guide the robots with handheld controls through a series of movements to perform specific surgical procedures. They are judged on precision and speed. The highest scoring teams have the opportunity to advance to higher competitions. The MHS Lobos Wolfpack attended the Boosting Engineering Science and Technology, or BEST, kickoff for the year, which was held at Texas Tech University on September 23rd. The team toured the Tech campus and got familiar with where the November competition will be held. Quote, "At present time, there are 25 students on the Lobos Wolfpack robotics team and room for more," said Michelle Hogan, principals of technology and robotics teacher and UIL robotics sponsor. The robotics program at MHS is in its third year as a team function, and this is the first year it is an actual class. The first 2 years, Hogan gave the program an introductory start by implementing the robotics into her regular classroom curriculum. The program is now on the curriculum as an elective class, and at this time is funded strictly by donations. Quote, "We are needing to raise approximately $30,000 for this year. We will have to depend on donations and business sponsors. The sponsors are displayed on our robots like they are on race cars and posted on our website. The money is used for the purchase of kits and building supplies. The donations also cover traveling to competitions, motels, and meals," Hogan said. Sponsors may make donations anonymously or in person at the high school. Other points of contact are Katie Jones in the business office, 432-943-2307, or online at keycjones@mwpisd.esc18.net, or robotics coach Michelle Hogan, 432-943-2519, or 318-663-0909, or online at bhogan@mwpisd.esc18.net. Grand Falls woman arrested for alleged credit card theft. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Grand Falls woman was arrested last Monday after police say she used a credit card which did not belong to her in at least 2 different locations in Monahans. Geraldine Bookmiller, age 68, of 191 County Road 386, was picked up on a Ward County warrant for a charge of credit card or debit card abuse, a state jail felony, after officers of the Monahans Police Department were called to Taylor's Food Store, located in the 1900 block of South Stockton, on September 11th, regarding a stolen wallet. According to MPD Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, "The victim told officers the wallet had been lost at the store. Then later, the victim learned a credit card was used at Stripes, the Texan, Kent Quick, Family Dollar, and at an ATM, all in Monahans. During the course of the investigation, officers were able to identify Bookmiller as the suspect in the credit card theft. Quintana added, the unauthorized charges totaled approximately $700. A warrant was obtained for Bookmiller, and she was subsequently arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail. Bond was set at $7,500, and Bookmiller posted the bond and was released. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in a state jail facility for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Chamber Burnett honored with Beacon Award. In a significant recognition of community leadership and innovation, Teresa Burnett, the executive director of the Monahans Chamber of Commerce, and the chamber itself were honored with the Beacon Award for Program Excellence. The award was presented at the annual Beacon Awards Luncheon held at the Odessa Marriott and Convention Center on Tuesday, September 26th. The Beacon Award, presented by the Permian Basin Nonprofit Management Center, is a testament to the unwavering commitment and vision of community leaders like Teresa Burnett. Under her leadership, the Monahans Chamber of Commerce has spearheaded initiatives that have had a transformative impact on the Monahans community. Central to the Chamber's achievements is the introduction of reliable high-speed broadband to Monahans. Recognizing the critical role of digital connectivity in today's world, the Chamber, led by Burnett, embarked on a 7-year mission to bridge the digital divide. Their efforts have not only enhanced connectivity, but have also opened up a plethora of opportunities for businesses, students, and residents alike. The Chamber's broadband contributions have garnered widespread acclaim. Philanthropic organizations have praised their community-centric approach, noting the transformative potential of the broadband initiative. Private equity partners have emphasized the project's dual promise of societal and financial returns. Meanwhile, governmental agencies have highlighted the alignment of the Chamber's efforts with broader public policy goals. According to Teresa, quote, we are so pleased and humbled by this award, and while it was directed at the Chamber, we would be amiss not to mention the contributions made by the entire community, including Monahans, the Monahans Economic Development Corporation, and Ward County, end quote. The Monahans high-speed fiber broadband network is nearing its completion. Currently undergoing final trials, the network is set to revolutionize digital connectivity in Monahans. Hosted America, the internet services provider, is expected to begin onboarding customers in Phase 1 in the coming weeks. This phase will cater to business and residential locations east of Main Street.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.